To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Record, damn it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. I'm your host, Dallas Busha, and with me today at our roundtable, we have
Don.
Al.
Hey, guess who's back?
It's Rook, baby.
Wait. Do that again.
This is Dallas.
Don.
Al.
And Rook.
Exactly.
Oh, you really are here.
I really am here.
Where have you been?
Ridiculous amount of work and house stuff and, yeah, all that. So.
And your son started driving, I see.
Kid started driving. Now you hear a high school marching band, and I'm so tired.
Well, that's the last time we were all together. You couldn't get together because you had to do something with a marching band.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which I'll have a lot more. Once marching band season ends, I'll have a lot more time available to, you know, be able to do stuff. Yeah. But, you know, Friday night games till 11, 12 o'clock, and then the kids all go to Denny's, and, yeah, you know, they're there till 12, 1 o'clock, and, yeah, I sleep on Saturdays if I'm not working.
And you're starting to ramp up for your Halloween party.
The annual Murphy Halloween party coming into effect, absolutely.
Come one, come all.
Yeah. Come invited. All the invited people can come.
I just got uninvited.
So I actually spent the morning working on the garage trying to organize that out so that can be the lounge area as normal.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Nice.
Exhausting.
I'm sure it is. It is every year for you. You usually have a team of friends coming over to help you clean up and set up.
Usually about 2 weeks before the party, I get a mass group of people over here, but, you know, we're in September still, so I'm trying to get ahead of the game and not have, like, panic mode at the last minute. So I've already got, like, the backyard prep started, the garage prep has started. I pulled the one and only box of the 6 or 8 boxes of Halloween stuff out of storage this morning, which I really thought there was more in storage.
It always turns out to be enough every year, though. When you have the party, you've got a ton of stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
It always looks good.
Yeah.
You have your life-size Jack Skellington.
And we now have Sally to go with him.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So,
nice.
Yep.
It should be fun.
It better be fun.
So it's nice having everybody back, the entire crew. It's been a while since all four of us.
I know. I missed you guys. I feel like I've had Don's book forever.
Well, that was the last time we had it. It was way back, like, what, April? February, April?
Yeah, it must have been.
It must have been.
A good 6 months ago, probably.
My question is, if Dallas had done some shows, you probably would have come with him on some of those.
How does this turn out to be my fault?
Because any chance I can get, I'm going to blame it on you.
See how he did that?
That's nice. I like that. I like the way that worked.
All right. Well, look, let's talk some comics. Let's jump right into it. We've all got some big piles. I mean, Rook's got a huge pile of books over here.
And I want to know what the top one is. I've been looking at
it
since I've been
watching. All right. So everybody knows I get the loot crates. This came in my loot crate. The book is called The League of Regrettable Superheroes, the Loot Crate Edition by John Morris. Okay? And I just had to break this out to show you guys. Because particularly one character shows up in this book that I just, when I saw it, I thought, this is just pure comedy. Ladies and gentlemen, the regrettable superhero, US One.
Yes, one of my guys.
Right?
That's
right. Yes. I thought you'd love that.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Hell yeah.
Now, this is a great, it's a nice hardcover book, and the cover is just. It's mostly Golden Age art, like on the cover at least.
It's mostly Golden Age art, but I'm telling you, there's Golden Age, 80s, 90s, you know. One of my particular favorites.
Fantoma.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
You posted it on your blog.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show a little bit. She's like strange. That's
remember that group
actually.
Fantomas?
Yep.
Fantomas, yeah. I have a comic book of Fantomas, yeah.
There's
such a cool book because it tells you the history of the characters and everything.
Mother Hubbard.
Well, you know, that's something. My daughter, she always watches Conan O'Brien. And Conan O'Brien had Bruce Timm from the Batman animated series.
Yes.
And while he's on the show, they keep pulling out these drawings of some of these DC characters.
There's another one of my picks, The Geek. It's my team, right? My team is
right
in here.
Yeah, the team that you had.
And here, look, because here's the other one. Here's, like, the Captain Marvel, dude.
Yeah.
Is this my team? Remember when we did our team over here? Is it Captain Marvel?
Yes.
That's my team, I think. I don't know if I put... Did I put the Daredevil? Did I put the Dracula?
No. You're such a jerk. You had that book, didn't you?
You're wishing you'd put Dracula and Frankenstein in it.
Oh, God. The Fat Man and the Human Super. I don't know if I should, but I have those.
Fat Man
too.
The Human Flying Saucer?
Oh, these are the greatest, man.
But
love this book.
Conan O'Brien was pulling up some of these characters from DC, and one was Batlash, you know, who Al and myself liked quite a bit. But he's holding up, says, a cowboy dandy, because that's exactly what Batlash was. He was a dandy. But
now, what would define dandy for a younger generation?
The dandies were men that...
Did I pick Prez?
No.
Was Prez one of my guys?
No.
Okay.
A dandy was a man that wore a corset, you know, dressed really, really nice, but... I guess you'd be... They were kind of prince.
Metrosexual.
Yeah, Prince was a dandy. Even though girls liked him and stuff, I don't think these men were flaunting it. They were homosexuals. But they had a trait, and it was basically that's what they said. They looked like a dandy. And there was a guy that really cared about his appearance and kind of had a bit of a flair to him. But they wore corsets. You know, I mean, they wore men's clothes and stuff. But that's what, you know, the term dandy always was. And I... Anyway, Batlash dressed that way. He had a nice Western-style kind of suit. He always wore a vest. And he had a smooth way of talking. And anyway, when Conan O'Brien was saying that to Bruce Timm, a cowboy dandy, and my daughter was watching it with me, and she says, Dad, really? It's a real character, but Batlash was a great character and great story. Sergio Arganaz created him, you know. So even though you can sit there and see, I mean, some of these you look at and you think, what were they thinking? But some of these are great fun. But Rom, didn't you guys read him when you were kids?
Okay, so Rook just opened the book,
okay,
and there's a character called Rom Space Knight, who's, if anybody read the Bronze Age, everybody knows who Rom Space Knight is.
Al was just talking about him.
Yeah, that's a great book.
This book is so fantastic. I mean,
you can
it tells
only get
you,
it from the crate, or you can get it at
the store? No, I think you can get it at the stores and everything.
Oh, okay.
But it tells you the creators, their debut issues, the primary problems, you know. Just all kinds of great stuff about these characters.
Yeah,
know?
There's a
and
long biography
Dallas,
about each character.
X-Force.
I remember that character.
Extreme. Adam X.
Yeah, yep. Some early 90s.
Back in the X-Force days.
Oh, how horrible is that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the sad thing is I actually like that character.
Oh,
what? He was like...
It's okay.
He was like the dark shatter star to, you know, of the, you know, yeah, I'm lame, whatever.
I mean, it's a loaded book, though. It's pretty thick.
Absolutely.
There's
a ton
of good stuff.
This one's kind of an odd one. Fat Man, the Human Flying Saucer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex was pointing him out.
That's C.C. Beck. That's the guy who created Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shazam.
Yeah.
The superheroes. I've posted some of these books on my blog,
yeah.
By the way.
I'm telling you, this is a fun book. This is a fun book, and it came with my loot crate.
That's
pretty cool.
It'd be worth
man.
The price of the loot crate right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know what it looks like? It looks like those books when we were kids, those little books we used to get in school, you know, like the...
Yeah, it does. It does kind of look like a little school book, you know?
It does, because it's the perfect size. It's kind of like a 6x9 inch, probably.
Yeah. This is the book you want to keep, like, in a backpack, and like, oh, you think that character's great? Well, take a look at this one.
We all need to take turns going through that book and finding our favorite or our worst superhero. Yeah.
Well, I did that. You know, but yeah, there you go. It's like, oh, you think
that's what
bad?
Al's team was. Is
three of them.
Pretty,
on there.
Yeah. Al's whole team was out of this book.
At least the other five. Yeah, there you go.
That's great.
Yeah, that is a cool book. League of Regrettable Superheroes. They should all get together and have Alan Moore write them.
Yeah, but when you say that, I know there's a lot of people that really like some of those stories you loved.
Sure, I do. They're fun. They're stupid, but they're fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a really fun read. It's you know, it's great to see some of the characters that they list. I mean, some of it's just ridiculous. It's like, wow, let's throw anything against the wall and.
Well, that's
you
like
know.
In the '40s. They were throwing anything in the wall and seeing what sticks. They would have like 68-page books with 20 superheroes in them and see which one like becomes.
They were just hiring any Joe off the street that had an idea or a concept for a superhero character, and they were. You're right. They were just seeing which ones would actually stick and which
well,
ones
I,
would
I
last.
I was talking to somebody more specifically in the music industry, but when like some kind of art form starts. And it becomes like everybody's like inventing. That's when it's at its best. When when they perfect it and it becomes corporate, then it gets boring and crappy. You know, because they figured it out. They take all the rough edges out and they make it palatable for everybody. But in the early days, and everybody's trying to figure out what to do. Like, hey, I got this kind of rock. Hey, I got prog rock. Hey, I got you know, classic rock or whatever, or glam rock or whatever. Then it becomes cool.
Well, that's like electronic music. I mean, you know. Electronic music became so heavily influenced by Hollywood and commercialized, you know.
Sure.
And there's some bands out there, some well, I say bands, groups, team-ups, you know, duos, individuals that are doing some amazing, amazing stuff in the electronic, in the electronics genre right now.
Sure.
There's a heavy movement right now that I see with electronic artists that they do like acoustic unplugged cover of their own songs, which is really really awesome.
That is kind of
I absolutely you know, there's one guy Cry Wolf in particular, really cool, really awesome, does his song on a baby grand piano. It's amazing.
Did you ever hear this electronic band, not that we're going to do a music show, but just one mention, a band called 8-Bit Weapon?
Yes. Yep.
They're like electronic. They're using game.
Yep.
Absolutely. We play that on a Martin show, a Mouse show, I should say.
Kind of like Horse the Band.
Yeah. Oh, they're funny, man. I love that band.
I love anybody that does like 8-bit styled music.
It's so much fun. You hear like Galaga sounds, and you're going like, wow, that's weird. And he's playing mostly punk rock. They play 8-Bit Weapon just to screw everybody over, and they're going like, what the hell is this? But anyway. I mean, more like in comic book, like in that book, everybody was just throwing, you know, whatever they could at the wall. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, superheroes started getting popular. And it's like, you know, then Jack Kirby came along. And now it's all been corporate and done for movies and for pajamas and for whatever, you know, that it kind of takes a little bit of the life out of it. But, yeah, whatever, you know. But all that's in its purest form.
I got to read this one to you. This is the greatest comic I've never heard of in my life.
What is it?
Dr. Hormone.
I saw that.
You want to stop death? I can stop it. I will increase the size of your army. I will make your soldiers immune to death. Where has this comic book been all my life?
I can find it. Where was it? What
it was Popular Comics number 54 from Dell Comics, August 1940.
Okay.
Adherence to basic medical ethics. Spotty.
Is it Dr. Hormone?
Dr. Hormone. Drugged by Bob Bug. That's a
pseudonym for somebody, yeah.
My God, this is awesome.
Wow.
Oh, it says...
We need to post a lot of these pics on the site.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a fun book. I mean,
no, I want a copy.
I can't even remember all the things that came in that crate, but that was the A number one. Absolutely, that you know, because when we open the crates, they get split up between myself, my wife,
the bouncer.
That's another good one.
Well, this guy's wearing like a dress,
and this one was
very
all
jaunty.
Mine. I mean, my wife literally pulled this one out of the crate and went, "This is yours."
Oh, absolutely! My
is this
God.
The crate that had like that little miniature comic book that you gave me?
This was a newer crate. This we actually stopped getting the crates for a little while, just simply because it was just kind of getting a little. I mean, you see the stack of empty crates over there. You know, we needed to kind of back off for a little bit and, like, you know, make some room for all these things that we're getting.
I mean, I'm surprised Mattery the lad's not in there. He didn't. I can't believe he didn't make.
Now,
it
was he one
know.
Of the Legions of Superheroes?
Yeah.
He ate his way through everything or whatever.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about
Mattery?
Matter Eater lad, when he was in the '50s and '60s, I'd read these in old comics. He was treated seriously. He was a serious character, even in the 70s. And then in the 90s, they brought back the strip as Legionnaires. I guess they were clones of the original Legion superheroes, so they were kids again. And everybody had a logo of their power on their outfit, and he had a big tooth. And he always wore sunglasses, and he was kind of cynical, you know. And there was the whole strip, he was always kind of there as this kind of smart guy sidekick. And then at one point, he had to use his powers to get him out of something, and he was embarrassed, like rolling his eyes, oh, God, I hate to do this. And then he ate the iron bars or whatever it was. But when I was growing up, he was just another guy that was just as powerful as Sun Boy or Lightning Lad or Superboy. He just ate everything.
He just did things a little differently.
But sometimes it's the time. If you try to judge things by modern eyes, it may seem silly, but maybe in the 40s, some of these things weren't that bizarre.
That's the beauty of the golden, and I would say especially the silver age of superheroes, is you had some outrageous stuff. We talk about it all the time on the show, yeah. But you know, it's fun stuff to look back on, and it's kind of weird looking at it out of context now, but back in the 50s,
yeah.
That was awesome. It was so entertaining.
That was like an ingenious idea. Now we look at it and go, that's the dumbest freaking idea
because
ever.
Because the 12 or the 10 or 12 year old of today is much different than the 10 or 12 year old of the 1950s.
Oh yeah, well you got to also think the 10 or 12 year old of today has, you know, video games and television and 24 hour cartoons on Cartoon Network, and you know.
Yeah, we're a little too hip now.
They constantly have pop culture thrown at them in every various way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little different. You know, comic books are in the 50s, that was one of the main ways to escape for a kid.
It was a major form of entertainment. You didn't have television.
You're absolutely
radio
right.
And comic books.
Yeah.
And stickball, and you know.
Well, that's
stickball. It's a stick and a ball.
That's something Al and I always talked about, was they always had comic book adaptations to the movies. You know, in the 60s, it was just a regular Dell comic, like Yellow Submarine or something. But later, Marvel was always doing it, you know, for Star Wars. Well, you collected those comics. But then they started making the magazine size. Empire Strikes Back, Dune, Blade Runner.
Yep.
And that's where you got it if you wanted to revisit the movie, because they didn't have home video back then, you know.
It was another form of advertising or merchandising or whatever. Star Wars was like the... I remember in 77 when the comic book came out, I worked there. I was working at a Play World, and had all the toys came out. We were like, what is all this stuff? You know, it's like, where'd this come from?
Yeah.
It was just this one movie that was playing like at drive-ins. And then now, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
we just had Force Friday where they dropped all the brand new toys out. You know, which, has anybody seen the new droid? The toy of the new droid.
The
BB-8.
That's
the
cool.
The little remote control. Oh, dude, that thing looks so sweet.
Yes, it does.
It's the ball droid. It's a ball.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And they have a remote control version of it that just, you know, rolls around and crap.
On Facebook, somebody had a video of them taking it apart to see how it worked.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
I'm supposed they haven't done the Star Wars drone yet.
There's a Millennium Falcon drone that came out on Force Friday.
There's a Millennium Falcon drone. I believe someone actually... I saw somewhere somebody was working on a TIE fighter and a Death Star.
Wait a second. Have you guys seen, and now I think there's only one, they only built one. It was a toy company. But there's a 6th scale Millennium Falcon. It's 18 feet long.
Wow.
Yep.
And we'll have to post some pics up. I'll give you some pics to post on the site. But it's an 18 foot long Millennium Falcon. And it's compatible with whatever toy company it is. I'm sorry, I can't think of it. They make 12-inch action figures. They make 12-inch Star Wars figures. And so they made it to scale, because that's a 6th scale. And they also made a TIE fighter. And so they have these cool panorama shots on their website of, like, an army of stormtroopers, the 12-inch stormtroopers, a 12-inch Vader, and then, like, a 6th-scale TIE fighter and an 18-foot-long Millennium Falcon. And it's just shocking. Like, the level of detail on this is incredible.
All right. We want to talk Star Wars drones. Here's the best one ever.
So there's a is that a real thing?
That's a real thing.
There's a scout trooper from Return of the Jedi on his speeder bike, and apparently has a drone. We'll post that on the site too.
How cool of a drone is that?
Send that pic to Don.
I'll send it over to him.
That's awesome.
That's just awesomeness.
Don, back when we were kids, we used to have in the comic books that ad for buy get a submarine. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right.
Right next to the sea monkeys.
Right next to sea monkeys. Yeah, that's what we had. So we were deprived or depraved or whatever the hell we were. But anyway,
a little bit of both, maybe.
I was going to say, were you depraved?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Yeah, maybe more than one or the other, but anyway. Toys, I tell you. Toys, anyway.
Well, jumping back into comics, I know Don's got a huge pile, too. Do you want to talk about one of those books?
Yeah, but not in the pile. One thing, and I say this all the time on the show now.
Going off the script.
Yeah, well, no, it's... I always whine about I wish they had finally published these, I wish they'd collect these, and every time I complain, then I find out they did do it.
Why were you hiding this? Holy crap!
Oh, yeah.
Explain.
All right, I'm a big fan of the old newspaper strip, Alley-Oop, by V.T. Hamlin. Now, different Kitchen Sink Press had published Alley-Oop. They did two volumes in the 90s, which were nice. A lot of times they were dailies. And then somebody's got another, I think IDW has a small daily when he was time traveling. Alley-Oop was a caveman, and for the first 7 years of the strip, he was nothing but a caveman. And it was always in the land of Mu where he's from, and he had a dinosaur. He wrote it. His name was Alley-Oop. He had a girlfriend named Ula. You know, I guess the guy liked French things. But, yeah. It was a strip that I loved. I was growing up in Texas. The newspaper there, they ran it, and it was by Dave Growy, which was V.T. Hamlin's assistant. But anyway, Dark Horse Comics, I was complaining to Al on one show, and I came home and just started looking up to see if it was ever on, and Dark Horse put out two of these volumes. And these are sweet. These are the biggest books. They're like the size of those Masterworks books.
Yeah, this is, I would say, it looks like maybe a 12 by 18 inch hardcover. It is massive. And I have to say, Dark Horse Comics and Fantagraphics Comics always make the best quality collections of old
IDW
books.
Does.
Well, IDW does as
if
well.
If you look at the cover, though, they use varnishes over the logo and Ali and Ula on the dinosaur. It's a varnish, so it kind of stands out. But they're sweet. And the Sunday pages were kind of unique because each one, you know, they were self-contained. But this is back when the comic strip, like Little Nemo, covered the entire newspaper page. All the cartoonists had a page to work from.
And oh, wow.
Every Sunday, besides the strip, he always had at the upper right corner a box with the dinosaur. And he even told the kids on some of them, you can cut them out and keep a scrapbook.
And it was a real dinosaur, a different one every week?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, you got to remember, these things came out in the 40s. So I'm sure they're antiquated, you know, technology now. But they covered all kinds of, you know, dinosaurs, insects, fish, mammals. And, but it was just a sweet strip.
Man, this is impressive.
I loved it.
It's huge.
They've got two volumes of this. They said they're going to do the complete Sundays, so I don't know if that does complete the Sundays. I can't imagine it. After the strip ran for 7 years, the way I'd read these is these books I'd find in the 70s. They were, I guess we call them fanzines at the time, but Modern Comics, Nostalgia News.
And Yesterday's Comics.
Yeah. You know, I'd buy these for the Alley-Oop reprints. They had Buzz Sawyer, Captain Marvel, anything from the newspapers. But after the strip ran for 7 years, Ali and Ula was on the run from King Guzzle of Mu. And there was a little camera set up out in the brush. And they didn't know what was going on, and they walked up to the camera to get away. And in the camera, Ali and Ula disappeared. And I guess they're in the 50s. They come in, and it's three men that had a time travel machine. One was a doctor, I think Womung was his name. And after that, Alley-Oop became a troubleshooter. They'd send him back to time, and he'd meet Alexander the Great, he'd meet Cleopatra. You know, he'd go all over the place and meet these different figures in history. And reading those, I just assume that's what all he do. But he does go back to Mu and hang out in Mu and do stuff as well. But the strip, after 7 years, completely changed into a time travel type strip.
Yeah, we talked about it on the last show a little bit.
That's really
no, we
showed it to me.
I showed it to
you.
That's a really impressive book, though. I mean, just the size of it. That's a large size coffee table book.
It's a newspaper.
That you could,
Well, it's like those master books that they're doing. Like you know, they shoot the original artwork from. It's the same kind of size.
So it's high quality, good stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I've seen these in other magazines when they have Alley-Oop and they'll show the Sunday pages, but when you have it on a magazine size page, it's not quite the same as seeing, this isn't as big as the original. It used to be they were a full newspaper strip, but when I was reading that book, Myrna saw it, and she goes, That's how you drew when I met you. Well, I was always trying to draw like Alley-Oop.
That's, you know what? Yeah. It's funny. We've probably talked about it a little bit, you and I, in passing, but I recognize Alley-Oop. It was a strip from the 40s, you said?
Yeah, it was in the 40s, and it's still on to this day. Dave Grawe was his assistant, who's a really good artist. But when E.T. Hamlin retired, Dave Grawe took over the strip. When I was growing up, I thought V.T. Hamlin was gone. I thought he died. Well, he has now, but he was alive and living in Sarasota, Florida. And I read about it. He was an interview that they did in Comics Journal. I guess he passed away in the early 90s. But I guess, I don't know what he's like when he's younger, but he sounded really cantankerous, you know, and unpleasant. And some of the things he said was the guy doing the interview asked him, he says, well, what do you think of the state of current comics today? And he said, young man, I'm looking at the end of my life with a little bit left, and do you think I even care about that kind of stuff? Oh, well, that's a little harsh. And then later he brought up about his assistant, Dave Grawe. He says, Dave Grawe's a damn fool. He doesn't think like me. Why would he take over that strip? Well, that's true. Dave Grawe was a good cartoonist. I like how he did it. He kind of simplified it some, but the stories weren't that interesting to me anymore. Saying that, though, I read them in the strip. When I found a paperback, you know, collection of them, I bought it, and I enjoyed it. But now it's a married couple. I think Bender is their name. They live in Oklahoma, and I know they run it in the Oklahoma paper after I left. But anyway, it's still an ongoing strip, but I don't think it's in a lot of papers. But, you know, people read it.
Nice.
But nevertheless, the V.T. Hamlin, I wish they'd do the dailies in a nice complete book like this, but there's two volumes. I love it. I'm going to get the second one, and that's all I got to say.
That's awesome. All right, well, on that note, let's go ahead and take a music break, and then we'll come back and talk some more comics.
Make me so wild now.
Tell me.
can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
All right, we are just to fit the screen. All right, we're back. That was Lana Del Rey.
So
Lana Del Rey, wow, that's a
who is that?
I think that was her first album that came off of. Yeah,
perfect.
So well known, and we're playing her on the show.
Yes, we are.
We're not supposed to be doing that.
We just did.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk about a book. So it was The one of the Humble Bundles that I got, the Image one that I usually talk about, had a great book that Don also read, so he's going to be talking about it too, hopefully with me. So it's called Satellite Sam. It's volume one with the first five or six issues in it. So it's written by Matt Fraction and drawn by the legendary Howard Chaykin. It basically follows and come on in and correct me if I'm wrong, Don. It's been a month or so since I read it. But the story follows a television network and its cutthroat manager.
From the 50s.
Yeah, exactly. It's from the 50s, but it focuses on the cast and the crew of a show called Satellite Sam. So it's more about the private lives of the people involved with the show rather than the show itself. I'm not going to give anything away, but there's a catalyst, something that happens to one of the people on the show early on that kind of changes the course for everybody in the book. But anyway, it is incredibly fun. It's written, like I said, written by Matt Fraction, who's one of my favorite writers these days. So he has an ear for dialogue in comic books. So the dialogue's fantastic. My major gripe was the story itself is a bit confusing. Yeah. And I think a lot of that for me is Chaykin's art, which I love. It's usually highly detailed, and it looks beautiful in black and white. But for me, it was hard to differentiate between some of the characters in the story, because a few of them look very similar, so it was kind of hard for me to follow it. But I mean, that being said, I love, obviously Chaykin's great. He handles pacing in the book like a master, and he uses a lot of visual cues and images in the book. For instance, you see clocks in the background, or like in between panels to tell you kind of what time it is during the day. He has images of TV screens when somebody's watching a show, or it's a show's being projected, kind of like Frank Miller did in Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
Also, one thing that I really love that he did is there's scenes in a nightclub, and they're appropriately foggy. I'm sure they use a little Photoshop there, but Chaykin has these subtle musical notes and music sheets, like on the top of the panels, to show that there's music playing in the background. And it's just so subtly put in the background of the panels that it looks beautiful, looks awesome. But so the art's great, and honestly, for me, the visual spectacle of it and that clever dialogue was better than the story itself. Just because it was a little hard for me to follow, but man, I really enjoyed reading this, and I ran through it really quickly. So, what do you think, Don?
Well,
you know the book.
Yeah, I still read it. Everything Dallas described is absolutely right on the thing. American Flag, I felt the same way about. Sometimes I wasn't sure about which character was which until I read it for a while. And there were so many things going on in that story that I would get myself confused. Eventually, you read long enough, it comes back to you. And this one, Matt Fraction wrote it completely. Howard Chaykin was the illustrator. Howard Chaykin didn't write it. He drew the living hell out of it.
And Matt Fraction, if anyone's read any of his stuff, I mean, some of his bigger stuff is, you know, Uncanny X-Men he wrote a couple of years back. He's done some, he's done Satellite Sam style stuff similar to what Ed Brubaker does. So he's in a lot of crime noir stuff. But, and this is kind of a noir-ish tale in its own way. Not necessarily focusing on crime.
What's going on there?
Go back up. You can tell what's going on.
Is he puking or something?
No.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh.
That won't be posted to the blog.
Yeah, no, that part can't be posted.
Now, Howard Chaykin, one time, when he was doing American Flag, and then he started doing a Black Kiss. Have you guys ever read Black Kiss or heard of it?
I don't think so.
Vortex Comics, he did Mr. X and a bunch of books like that in the 80s. They agreed to do Howard Chaykin's Black Kiss. And that's one thing I think that really gets him upset was it didn't sell. And he thinks it's some of his best work. Like Satellite Sam, it was black and white. The cover was black and white, and I think it had a red set of lips up in the logo. But it's called Black Kiss, and they were sold polybagged. And they were the full price of a comic, but I think they're only like eight pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't much. But it's black and white, but in an interview he was talking about he likes to draw sexy things. He likes sexy stuff. An American flag, everybody was, it was like a bag of hamsters. Everybody's banging each other and, everybody has,
That's a great analogy.
I love that analogy.
And, but, somebody find out they were an illegitimate person of another person they're sleeping with. I mean, you name it, it was going on in that book. And I bought the first issue of Black Kiss because I'm a huge Howard Chaykin fan. And at the time, I was newly married, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I thought, I'm paying a full price for a pamphlet, and he had a lot of intrigue and stuff going on in it, and he had a lot of no-holds-barred sex in it, but I never bought another one. I've never even seen another one. And I guess they put it out as a collection, and then he did Black Kiss 2, which I've never seen, and I just read an interview with him. I guess he's on a panel, and he was really upset that the audience, most of them, had never seen it. He gets resentful. Satellite Sam, I learned from Al, actually. You liked his work in black and white.
Yeah, I did. I like it better than in color.
I'd have to agree with you. His work lends itself to that medium, man. It looks fantastic.
I like it both ways. I like him on newsprint color. I also like him fully rendered on slick paper. The black and white work, he's putting a lot of patterns and stuff.
It's more design intensive.
He used to use, patterns like Spark. From Charkpat and Zipatone and stuff like that. He said his assistant, I guess, scanned in a bunch of stuff in a computer and he used it. The story is actually pretty neat because it's talking about the television industry back in the 50s when it was, in its infancy. And the protagonist of the story is, it's a local TV show called Satellite Sam, and they do a weekly segment. I think the guy was the weatherman that was Satellite Sam, which we talk about all the time for horror hosts and stuff.
Sure.
So basically the show is like a Flash Gordon kind of 1950s, or a Buck Rogers, more appropriately.
And it sounds like it's all put together with masking tape and,
flying by the seat of the pants, last-minute script rewrites, literally 5 minutes before the show airs.
But the guy that plays Satellite Sam is murdered at the end. Well, that's the first issue. So, His son is there working behind scenes, resents the whole thing. They're panicking, so they have the son replace him as Satellite Sam, and they write in the script that, he was made younger. Then after that, the whole story unfolds. You start finding out more about what happened and who was banging who and who was upset at who. And he even covers race issues in it, which is something... When I say that, in today's world, you still got Black Lives Matter, you got white police people getting killed, and everybody on Facebook freaking out over everything in the world. But it was a different world then, and if they even thought you had another racist blood inside you, you were blackballed from society. And they cover a lot of that stuff. They cover a lot of hate in it. So even though Dallas upset at me that I gave away the thing in the first issue... But Dan Pritchett, when I was talking to him, he mentioned Matt Fraction because I mentioned this book, and he said a lot of Matt Fraction's writing kind of veers towards that, and so does Howard Chaykin. So they're a good team. I think the series just finished, and it did just finish. But somebody said, I wonder if they're going to do a follow-up series to it. They could, but I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's entertaining. If anything, just for Chaykin's art. Looks good.
Good deal.
Yeah, Black Kiss was one of those books. I was running a comic shop back then. That was one of the infamous ones that we had to hide behind the counter. And people would older people would come in, hey, did you get that Chaykin book? I was like, yeah, hold on for a second. I felt like I was like dealing porn or something. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Satellite Sam is it's overtly sexual, but it's all subdued. I mean, there's never any real graphic nudity in it. I mean, it's there really isn't.
Tell them about that page you guys are laughing about.
No, that's okay.
it does show it, and
well, it's behind. It's shot from behind the dude, but
yeah, well.
But he did a Howard Chaykin in the 80s. He did a three-issue maxi series for or prestige format series for DC about Blackhawk, the old Will Eisner character. And there's a woman that's obviously giving the guy, under the table.
A good time.
And I'm like, really? And I was reading about it in Comics Journal, and they said, oh, yeah, here's the page with the infamous. And that was, you know, it wasn't behind the counter. It wasn't, it might have said for mature audiences, but it was Blackhawk, and it was sold out on the shelves and
yeah,
everything
sure
else.
I sold that book, and Will Eisner wasn't happy.
Yeah. I love the series myself, but, you know, Howard Chaykin's not afraid to put stuff in, and usually his style, it appeals to adults. I don't really see kids really ever enjoying it, you know, so.
All right, moving along. Who's up next?
Not me.
Not me.
I got nothing, man.
You got nothing?
I just got Ron.
Oh, I got a stack of the new Marvel Secret Wars stuff going on. And I got to tell you, this is... Everybody who's listened has heard me piss and moan about events and overblown events and DC and Marvel. How dare you, you know, drag this and this into it. But this Secret Wars event is fun as hell, mainly because of what they did. Take some of your favorite storylines like Days of Future Past and turn it into Years of Future Past with the X-Men. You know, basically, the idea is that the multiverse has collapsed, and everything is now broken into and ruled by Doom. So all these great storylines like Days of Future Past, Extinction Agenda, Age of Apocalypse, they have their own little domain inside of the world, all run by Doom. Dr. Doom is God.
Nice.
So, you know, all these great storylines that we loved back in the day have their own title. And it's all going on at the same time that everything else is happening. So, like, Age of Apocalypse is happening the same time as Extinction Agenda, as the Infinity Gauntlet, as X-Men 92, you know. So this has been a really, really damn fun. And, I mean, I'm focusing mostly on, like, the X-Men stuff. Never mind what's happening with all the other characters out there, you know. I'm telling you, if you're not reading Secret Wars, you're really missing out on some really fun reimaginings and further imaginings of these great storylines from years past.
Go ahead.
It's a cool idea to be able to somehow mesh all these past events together, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of a neat idea.
It is. And, you know, like the Old Man Logan series, which is not that old of a book.
Oh, it's going up to a decade now, isn't it?
Old Man Logan? No.
Oh, no. You know what I'm thinking of is, where did they reveal his history or whatever?
Oh, you're
Logan?
Thinking, yeah, no, you're thinking, no, that's way old. But Old Man Logan is when Logan, went into the future and Logan's an old man and, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, Old Man Logan, is traveling through the worlds. He's not supposed to be traveling through the worlds, but he is. So, you know, you're kind of getting his perspective of, wait a minute, you know, you're all dead. And then he goes to the next world and it's like, wait a minute, you're all dead, but you also don't look anything like what you did just 5 minutes ago. So, you know.
Mm. Brian Bendis is in charge of, like, all the X-Men books these days, too, isn't he?
Yeah.
The majority of them.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas, just take a look at some of the artwork inside of, there it is, X-Men 92. Now, this
so
is
not,
like,
not issue 92, it's actually, like,
no,
1992.
It's like 1992. Oh. Like, take a look at this artwork, you know? This is the X-Men of the 90s, you know?
Oh, yeah,
that's,
it is.
It's all done in that style. So, you know, that's why it's being called X-Men 92. You know, and it's...
So these are all one-shots?
No, these are all... I don't know how many issues are going to be in each one, but, like, I'm up to, like, issue 3 on most of them. I desperately need to get up to the comic book shop and pick up my stuff. But, you know, this is all... It's all done, you know, with the concept of this is history, this is the only history.
So now this is post, now that they had a huge thing where they got rid of the 616 universe, right?
All the universes.
Okay.
Everything collapsed into itself and merged and became one.
Is this a result of that?
Isn't that Crisis?
Yeah, it's what it's
like.
It's like the Marvel version of Crisis.
Isn't it amazingly like something DC did?
So
one
is this all these miniseries, is this a result of that?
This is a result of the collapsing of the multiverse. The multiverse collapsed into itself. Basically, the world started merging. And as they merged, they were being destroyed. Well, the Illuminati figured this out, and basically Doom took control of everything and dubbed himself God.
Yeah.
He now runs around in a white set of robes, you know, in control of everything. Doctor Strange is his little henchman. You know, it's really interesting. You know, and House of M is going to be out with this. You know, I can't even tell you all the titles.
Well, I bought, God, of all things, I never read Secret Wars when the original thing came out. To me, and when I heard
nothing to do with that.
But when I heard they were going to bring it back, again, I had no interest. Saying that, I bought a book that Al and I talked about in a past episode. It was Captain Britain and the Defenders of something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I bought it because I'm a big Alan Davis fan, and I buy whatever he draws. He didn't write this. It was another guy, Al Ewing, I think was the name. But I got two issues of it, and it was Secret Wars. When I'm reading it, they keep talking about God Doom, and everything's different. There's a different. Instead of Tony Stark leaving the cave as Iron Man, it was that Doctor. And Tony.
Now that's happening in that particular storyline.
Yeah.
Now in a completely different storyline, Tony Stark is Iron Man, and everybody in the world runs around in an Iron Man suit.
Okay, so it is a multiverse and all these different things
like,
happening at the
same
time.
Basically, think Armory Wars with Iron Man. That happened, and now everyone has to wear Iron Man suits.
Wow.
So, you know, it's reimagining the outcomes of all these old storylines.
Yeah.
You know, like with, with Years of Future Past, well, the Days of Future Past never happened. That storyline never happened. So mutants are enslaved. And this is what happens if that would have continued on. So
what I love that Marvel seems to have been doing recently, and you probably caught on a long time ago because you read a lot more current comics than I do, but it's nice that they're not holding so much to continuity in certain aspects, and they're taking all these characters in their universe and they're just using them as chess pieces, and they're putting them over here and let's write a great story with Doom in charge.
Yep.
Let's write a great story, you know, with, you know, Doc Ock as Spider-Man, just things like
and
that. It's
everybody
fun.
Heard me absolutely attack the Ghost Rider storyline that they were doing before Secret Wars hit. Well, this new Ghost Rider storyline is still focusing on this newer Ghost Rider. It's doing it in a very different way. Ghost Riders, as it's now called, focuses on Arcade running a Ghost Rider race with Johnny Blaze, Danny Kench. And all these guys transform into Ghost Rider and race, and only the winner gets to go, you know, like party that night. The rest of them get held back and tortured. So
that sucks.
You're
first or last.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're either first or you're screwed. So, but yeah, it's, you know, and so it's interesting to see where they've placed different characters in the verse and what they're doing in it's not the multiverse, but it kind of is. Mm. But the multiverse has collapsed into one singular world. So
that's interesting.
Did you, when you were a kid, did you ever like the DC stuff where it was always different? You know, I did too. I always loved that stuff, and that was the thing when Crisis on Infinite Earths did it. They said that the problem was you had Earth 2, you had Earth 1, you had Earth Prime, you had Earth X, you had Earth M, and it got silly. So they tried to combine it all into one universe, which at the time made sense. Well, Alan Davis, going back to him, was a huge fan of that DC multiverse stuff. And in that strip Excalibur and Captain Britain, all that stuff, he was showing all that, where they had different worlds that lived within ours. And he'd go to, you know, Captain Britain would visit another world that was completely different than his, but they had a Captain Britain in it.
Well, here's the thing. If you're coming from the perspective of wanting to read some exciting or fun stories that might not necessarily be held back by continuity, then that's the way to go. I mean, it's fun. If you just want to sit down and read a fun comic and you don't give a shit where these characters came from or what their relationship to someone else is, you're going to have a good time just reading a book cover to cover. You know,
casual read.
Exactly. But there's a lot of people that enjoy that continuity and embrace it, and so that's one of the main reasons there were so many complaints back in the 80s about the multiverse in DC, and that's one of the reasons they did the Crisis.
What kind
of... And now it's neat... I'm sorry. It's neat that Marvel's doing kind of the same thing where they're giving, for the most part, scattering continuity to the wind, just telling some exciting, fun, dynamic, kind of fresh stories with these properties they have, with these characters they have. They can explore different relationships between these characters that you couldn't have in the past because you were marred or held back by continuity.
Yeah, well, and, you know, some of these storylines, they ended in such a finite way. And so now what they're doing is they're going back and they're going, all right, let's play with things a little bit, you know? So I'm real, like you said, Marvel's actually doing an event that's really fun. Yes. They didn't just collapse the multiverse and then blow it back up again and go, okay, all new books. No, they went, okay, all new books in this really screwed up little world.
It's, you know, cool. It's
it is. It is. It's a really screwed up little world. Like, think of the worst case scenario outcomes for most of those storylines that we've read. And that's what happened. So
I gotta say, I feel like it's kind of a it's a gamble for them to do something like this, and I applaud them for it, considering the majority, I'm assuming the majority of their readers are longtime readers that probably enjoy the continuity and enjoy, that's why they've been reading it for 20 years, because they enjoy reading this continuing story. So it's great that Marvel's jumping out of that and just getting, writing these fresh comics, these fresh stories that have nothing to do with that continuity, really.
Well, here's a question, because I know a guy who this problem has. Do you think, however great that is and how cool that is, do you think that alienates like a more casual reader? Because I know a guy I used to work with, he still works, you know, at the Widget Factory, that said he was getting into books and he was buying Spider-Man. But he only wanted to buy Spider-Man, but then when the event was happening, he had to buy Web of and Spectacular.
Right, and
awesome.
See, that's the
and
problem.
And he got alienated.
That's the problem with events, is that they can alienate very quickly. I mean, think about how...
Well, especially since events are annual.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Let's just do a quick count of how many titles I have sitting here. And this isn't even all the titles in the event that I'm getting. Okay? My last count with Marvel books was one, if any. Mm-hmm. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I can tell you there's probably 3 more. That's 3 Marvel titles that I'm picking up that I definitely, sure as shit, would not have touched before.
Let me ask you a real quick question then, because you were saying these are kind of different worlds that have collided. Mm-hmm. So if I'm reading, what's this, the Years of Future Past miniseries, and then I'm reading the Infinity Gauntlet.
Nothing, you can, nope, totally fine.
They're totally independent of each other.
They're independent of each other.
So that's the thing, that's what I meant by
this,
fresh from continuity.
I love this event. It's because... All right, for one, I'm a fan of these storylines. I love the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. I love the Days of Future Past, Extinction Agenda, Age of Apocalypse, my number one favorite of all time. Okay? Old Man Logan, great storyline. X-Men 92, I picked it up just because it looked like it might be fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was. It's like, okay, look at this old poppy style, you know, 90s drawing. You know, I'm mostly picking that up for the art, which, you know... It's like Rob Liefeld style art, but it's like, you know, nostalgic a little bit, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's of a time.
But like I said, think about this. Marvel is doing an event where it's like, okay, you don't have to worry about, with Civil War, somebody accidentally read Thunderbolts number whatever and found out Spider-Man unmasked himself before they read Civil War number whatever, where he, at the very end, he unmasked himself. You know, at the beginning of the Thunderbolts issue, Spider-Man had unmasked. At the end of the Civil War issue, he unmasked. Well, guess what came out the week before Civil War did? Thunderbolts.
A book
like
Civil War.
So everybody opened up Thunderbolts that week and went, what the serious F happened here? Uh-huh. You know? None of this collides, at least at the moment, okay?
Yeah. You don't have to buy them all.
None of this is colliding. You don't have to buy them all. But I'm buying a crap ton of them, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, well, you're excited about it, too.
Yeah.
It's refreshed some of the storylines and the characters
and
for you.
And personally, I think this is a great way to sell old books. You know, people are, you know, kids, you know, young readers are picking these up going, well, what the hell is Infinity Gauntlet? What the hell is Days of Future Past, Extinction Agenda, Age of Apocalypse?
Hey, if you want to feel really old, all those storylines are over 20 years old.
Yeah,
I know.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, yeah, welcome to the club, guys. You
know? We were in single digits.
You know, you see that on David Letterman. When I got married, my wife was a big Dire Straits fan, still is. But they had viewer mail, and somebody asked, I like the band, I like the stuff you play, but my question is, why don't you ever play any Dire Straits? And then David Letterman just says, well, that's a good question, but our band doesn't play anything unless it's 20 years old. And then Paul Schaefer and the World's Dangerous Band just got up and left the show. You know, it was funny. And that was 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so you talk about 20 years old, I'm thinking 20 years, you know, that's a long time. No, it's not. You know.
Yeah.
It is true. A long time, but it doesn't feel like a long time.
Not when you're living every single year.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, do we have any last words? We want to wrap this up and you know, end the episode, but I don't want to cut you off too quick, Rook.
Yeah, last words. Screw you, Marvel. Quit stealing all my money, you bastards.
Well,
I love
thing,
it.
Everything
I love
you're
it.
Talking
Bravo,
about.
Bravo, gentlemen.
The Captain Britain and Defenders is, I've got two issues. I really enjoyed it, but I haven't gone and bought any more, but it is a self-contained. I read mm-hmm. it. I understand that. I was telling Al when I'm reading it, they keep talking about God, Doom, and when I realized there was another city or another kingdom on the other side of the wall,
yep.
I says, I think this is Secret Wars tying in. And Al said, oh, it's right here on the cover, a little logo.
Yep. Yeah, but, each and every issue has somewhere on the cover a little Secret Wars piece. Yeah. So.
Well, when we finish these shows, I'm wanting to go over to Yancey Street and see if I can find a third issue, because I really like the series. I haven't bought any others, but it is. It's a fun, self-contained. I don't think you have to read everything, unless you're Rook, and then you're going to buy everything and mortgage your house.
Well, good for him. What about the DC one? Are you reading the Convergence or whatever? You even
no.
care about that?
No. I'm done with DC for a while.
No, you're going to have to go to some other podcast,
all right.
folks.
Actually, ask me. All
right.
Ask me.
Ask you. Are you reading Convergence? Yes, you are.
Ooh,
Dr. Fate.
Dr. Fate. Look at that.
All right, just real quick, because I know Dallas is showing his watch. But I like Dr. Fate. When I was a kid, I read a reprint of the Golden Age story, and he's probably one of my very favorite characters. Well, I was digging through previews at the stores to see, you know, something, and I saw they had pictures of Dr. Fate 5. And this is incredible. They reminded me a little bit of David Aja's Hawkeye. So I went to the store and found the first two issues. The guy at the store said, oh, I've been reading that. It's good. It is great. It's not the original Dr. Fate. This is a kid in America that's half Egyptian, half white, I guess. His father's a cab driver. He's a college student. He's in the museum. The mask keeps calling his name, and there's a cat following him around everywhere. And I like the artwork. I like how they put it together. And I'll tell you, I'm subscribing to it. I just told my retailer to start carrying it. I haven't been reading DC books for a long time. I think the last one I read was O'Mac and that Batwoman. But this one, I really enjoy a lot. I like it. I like Dr. Fate. And this is, they're not trying to put him in a square peg in a round hole. It's like a whole new thing that they're updating it.
Yeah, this kid is actually in control of the mask, where the mask usually controls the host.
Well, so. Now that's a later incursion. The Golden Age one, he learned everything through this guy that killed his father when he entered the tomb. And then they gave him the mask and all that just to wear. But this one, it's something I'm enjoying a lot. So, yeah, I guess those are part of Convergent.
Cool.
Nice. Looks good. Yeah. Well, okay, so we did get some DC talking here.
All right.
DC
thank talk. God.
All right. On that note, we're going to end the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to us yet again. And stick around for another week, and we'll be back. So, until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas' webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!